Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we're delving into Furious Hours by Casey Sepp. This riveting 2019 release uncovers the entwined stories of a 1970s serial killer, William Maxwell, and the enigmatic, celebrated author, Harper Lee. Casey Sepp, armed with her impressive literary and theological background from Harvard and Oxford universities, and acclaim from her writing in The New Yorker, The New York Times, and The New Republic, skillfully reconstructs the chilling narrative that Harper Lee was once drawn to. This book not only re-examines the haunting case of Maxwell and his victims, but also pays homage to Lee's unfinished quest to document this true crime saga. Furious Hours is a must-read for true crime enthusiasts eager to explore the depths of human depravity, literary fans intrigued by the life and ambitions of Harper Lee, and law aficionados fascinated by the complexities of courtroom drama. Join us as we unpack the dual mysteries that captivated Harper Lee and discover the story she yearned to tell. Furious Hours, Murder, Fraud, and the Last Trial of Harper Lee. Introduction. Unveil Harper Lee's mysterious second novel, Endeavor. In the heart of Alabama during the 1970s, a chilling narrative unfolded that seemed like a tale straight out of a grim Southern Gothic story. William Maxwell, a preacher with a dark side, was rumored to have gone on a killing spree, eliminating family members and anyone else who dared to cross his path. By 1977, his reign of terror supposedly claimed the lives of at least six individuals, but as fate would have it, Maxwell's life came to an abrupt end that same year, leading to a sensational trial. At the epicenter of this macabre tale was an observer whose presence added an unexpected twist. Harper Lee, the lauded author behind the timeless classic To Kill a Mockingbird. Imagine the intrigue as we delve into the twin enigmas surrounding William Maxwell's nefarious deeds and Harper Lee's fascination with his story. This journey uncovers the astonishing events that shook a small African-American community to its core, intertwining themes of murder, avarice, and extrajudicial justice. Prepare to traverse a landscape where voodoo beliefs and the mechanisms of law intertwined in a complex web, painting a backdrop for Maxwell's harrowing acts. Amidst this tumultuous setting, one question looms large. Why did Harper Lee, ensnared by the potential of this narrative, ultimately refrain from penning her second novel, a work that could potentially rival her first in cultural impact and significance? In exploring the depths of this cryptic tale, we'll venture into the motivations behind Maxwell's grim spree, examining the forces that possibly drove him to commit such heinous acts. Let's set the stage for a story of mystery, intrigue, and literary silence, examining the confluence of factors that may have halted Harper Lee from sharing this remarkable story with the world. Through this narrative, we unlock insights into a chapter in Lee's life that remained unpublished, providing tantalizing glimpses into what could have been a monumental second book. Part 1. A chilling tale emerges from the heart of Alabama. On an oppressively hot September day in 1977, a packed courtroom in Alabama buzzed with anticipation. The focal point of this suspense was not just any trial, but one enveloped in layers of intrigue and mystery. At the defense table sat Robert Burns, charged with first-degree murder, a man whose fate was about to be sealed by the jury's decision. Yet, the circumstances surrounding this case were anything but ordinary. For starters, the victim, William Maxwell, had a shadowy past, suspected by many to have been a serial killer. Adding to the trial's peculiarities, Burns's defense was orchestrated by Tom Radley, who had previously represented Maxwell. This web of connections seemed almost fictitious, and amongst the onlookers was a figure of literary renown, Harper Lee, the celebrated author of To Kill a Mockingbird, drawn to the courtroom drama unfolding before her. Turning the clock back 7 years unveils the genesis of this complex saga. It's August 1970, and William Maxwell, a World War II veteran and a Baptist preacher in Nicksburg, Alabama, was living a life shrouded in rumors and whispers. Known to be unfaithful, Maxwell's veneer of a preacher belied his true nature to those closest to him. The calm of this small community was shattered on the night of August 3, 1970. Mary Lou, Maxwell's wife of 21 years, received a frantic call. Maxwell had allegedly been in a car accident and needed her help. Leaving in a hurry, Mary Lou confided in their neighbor, Dorcas Anderson, before vanishing into the night, only to be found dead the next morning. Her body, discovered in her car on a desolate road, bore the gruesome marks of a brutal beating. Maxwell's account, contradictory to Dorcas Anderson's, depicted Mary Lou as having set off to visit her sister, only to meet her tragic end on her way back home. Yet, the evidence and Dorcas's testimony painted a damning picture of Maxwell, leading to his indictment for the murder of his wife by a grand jury in August 1971. This was but the beginning of a dark narrative, one that intertwined the fates of several individuals and captured the imagination of Harper Lee, sparking a burning curiosity that would draw her closer to the heart of this enigmatic case. Part 2: A Twisted Union from Courtroom Shock to Suspicious Nuptials. In an unfolding story that seemed to blur the lines between reality and fiction, the trial of William Maxwell took a dramatic turn in August 1971. Dorcas Anderson, initially poised as a critical witness for the prosecution, stood before a courtroom, hanging on her every word. What followed was a narrative twist that seemed straight out of a suspense novel. Against all expectations, Dorcas recanted her initial statement. She now testified that she had mistaken the events of the night Mary Lou died, declaring that Maxwell had been home early, thereby providing him an alibi. The revelation sent shockwaves through the courtroom, undermining the prosecution's case. With Dorcas's volte-face, Maxwell was acquitted, leaving the courtroom a free man amid rampant speculation and whispered rumors. In seemingly no time at all, just 16 weeks post-acquittal, an announcement stirred the small community once again. William Maxwell and Dorcas Anderson became husband and wife. This union, formed under a shadow of controversy, not only gossiped about the implicated and acquitted Maxwell, but also cast a dark cloud over Dorcas. The rapid transition from the star witness for the prosecution to Maxwell's bride did little to silence the murmurings of scandal, particularly as it emerged that Dorcas had been previously married until her husband's convenient and untimely death just months before her remarriage. The story of Abram Anderson, Dorcas's first husband, added layers to an already complex tale. Bound to a wheelchair due to a motor neuron disease, Abram's death was expected yet precipitous, coming after a prognosis that suggested he had years, not months, left. Officially listed as pneumonia, the cause of his death raised eyebrows, especially with suspicions swirling that Maxwell could have hastened Abram's demise with antifreeze poisoning. Thus commenced the marriage of William Maxwell and Dorcas Anderson, enveloped in suspicion and dark whispers that foreshadowed further tragedy. This union, born from a shocking trial and marred by allegations of foul play, set the stage for a series of events that would continue to captivate and horrify those who looked closer. Little did they know, the story of Maxwell and the tragic fates that befell those around him was far from over, with Dorcas Anderson stepping into a narrative plagued by death and mystery. Part 3: Shadowed by Tragedy, the unnerving continuation of William Maxwell's life. In the wake of his second marriage, an ominous pattern seemed to cast a shadow over William Maxwell's life, unfolding events that defied mere coincidence. Barely had the whispers surrounding his rapid union with Dorcas begun to settle when tragedy struck again. This time, the ill-fated call came early in 1972, informing Maxwell that his older brother John had landed in legal trouble for drunk driving and needed his assistance. Maxwell, stepping into the role of the responsible brother, bailed John out, ensuring a promise of court attendance. Yet, fate had a different plan. The day before his scheduled court appearance, John Maxwell's life met a tragic and abrupt end, mirroring the grim fate of Mary Lou. Discovered dead beside the road, the autopsy report revealed an alarmingly high alcohol level. Officially, his death was attributed to a heart attack induced by his excessive drinking. However, the murmurs within the community suggested a more sinister cause. Was it possible that Maxwell orchestrated his brother's intoxication, or perhaps camouflaged another lethal substance amidst the alcohol? Despite the growing suspicions, the absence of concrete evidence left law enforcement's hands tied, with no charges laid against anyone. The string of deaths close to Maxwell did not end there. In a harrowing development just 8 months following her brother-in-law's demise, Dorcas met a similarly mysterious end. Her lifeless body was discovered by the side of the road, with no apparent injuries, in what appeared to be a minor car accident. The subsequent autopsy only deepened the enigma, failing to pinpoint a definitive cause of death. Without the presence of alcohol, poisons, or signs of violence, authorities, much to their frustration and the community's horror, classified her death as due to natural causes. The series of untimely deaths, encompassing his brother, two spouses, and a neighbor within a mere 2 years, cast a long, dark shadow over Maxwell, who seemed to navigate through these personal tragedies with eerie resilience. Remarkably, his life marched on, marked by yet another chapter, a third marriage, mere months after mourning Dorcas. This cycle of loss, followed by rapid marital decisions, only fueled further speculation and dread among those watching. Maxwell, whether by chance or design, found himself at the center of a macabre narrative, leaving a trail of unanswered questions and a community grappling with disbelief and fear. Part 4, A Trail of Death and Greed, The Dark Legacy of William Maxwell. As the 1970s progressed, the cloud of death that seemed to hover over William Maxwell grew darker and more extensive. Following his marriage to Ophelia Burns, Maxwell found new quarters with her and her adopted daughter, Shirley Ann Ellington. However, the shadow of tragedy continued to loom large, marking its presence with the death of Maxwell's cousin, James Hicks, found lifeless in his car in February 1976. The grim tally escalated further when Shirley Ann was discovered dead under her car on the highway in June 1977, in a macabre twist of fate while apparently changing a flat tire. Parallel to the mounting death toll, Maxwell's financial fortunes appeared to flourish. A revelation emerged that Maxwell held numerous life insurance policies on the lives of those who fortuitously met their demise. This pattern of insuring and then collecting on the deaths of those close to him began with Mary Lou, his first wife. Within weeks of her death, Maxwell promptly notified 10 insurance companies, conveniently omitting his status as a suspect in her untimely demise while seeking payouts. Maxwell's talent for capitalizing on death proved eerily successful, netting him nearly $100,000 in the aftermath of Mary Lou's passing. Though certain insurers were initially hesitant to disburse funds amidst ongoing investigations, Maxwell, with the astute legal assistance of Tom Radney, pursued these companies relentlessly once acquitted. The duo's persistence paid off handsomely, with Maxwell pocketing hundreds of thousands of dollars from successfully settled claims against the lives of those he insured. Interestingly, this influx of wealth did not lead Maxwell to settle his numerous debts across the state. He continued juggling multiple jobs while amassing a fortune from the life insurance proceeds. The stark reality remained unmissable to those within Maxwell's orbit. He seemed to profit enormously from the untimely deaths of those around him, casting a pall of suspicion and fear over the community. With Maxwell's motives and means under scrutiny, the uneasy realization that anyone could potentially be his next target hung heavily in the air. This cycle of death and financial gain reached a tipping point following Shirley Ann's demise. A determined individual, spurred by the escalating tragedies, and Maxwell's apparent impunity, resolved to put an end to the cycle. This decision would mark a significant turning point in the sinister saga that had enshrouded a small Alabama community in fear and mystery for years. Part 5: The Dramatic Demise of William Maxwell in Broad Daylight. As the small Alabama community gathered to mourn the loss of Shirley Ann, the atmosphere within the local church was thick with grief and unease. The funeral of the young girl drew a large crowd, including her adopted uncle, Robert Burns, whose presence would soon shift the course of events in an unforeseen and violent manner. Concealed within his mourning attire, Burns harbored a gun, a foreshadowing of the impending act of vengeance. The funeral proceeded with a somber air until a piercing accusation shattered the solemn silence. Luvinia, Shirley Ann's sister, leveled a direct and bold charge against William Maxwell, proclaiming amidst the mourners that he was responsible for her sister's death and would face retribution. This accusation acted as a catalyst for Robert Burns, who, fueled by a mixture of grief and anger, turned towards Maxwell with a resolution hardened by Luvinia's words. In a swift and shocking moment, Burns extracted his gun and delivered 3 fatal shots to Maxwell's head, executing retribution in front of approximately 300 stunned witnesses. The church erupted into chaos, with attendees scrambling for safety in the wake of the gunfire. Once the initial pandemonium subsided, Burns found himself under arrest, facing charges of first-degree murder for his public execution of Maxwell. In an ironic twist, Burns chose Tom Radney to represent him, the very lawyer who had previously defended Maxwell and aided him in extracting substantial sums from life insurance claims. Radney embarked on a bold defense, proposing that Burns had succumbed to a bout of temporary insanity at the moment he pulled the trigger, attributing this mental lapse to the malign influence of Maxwell's supposed voodoo practices. Radney's defense leveraged the fear and speculation that had long swirled around Maxwell, portraying him as a man whose involvement with voodoo had endowed him with a sinister ability to manipulate and evade justice. This narrative of occult influence and supernatural intimidation sought to rationalize Burns's drastic action as the culmination of a community pushed to its psychological brink by Maxwell's enigmatic and menacing presence. The trial, already steeped in elements of surrealism and tragedy, was further distinguished by the attendance of Harper Lee, the esteemed author of To Kill a Mockingbird. Her presence at such a momentous and bizarre legal confrontation underscored the complexity and depth of the human drama unfolding in this small Alabama town, capturing the attention of the wider world and adding an additional layer of intrigue to an already captivating saga. Part 6: The Enigma of Harper Lee's Literary Silence. Close to 2 decades after catapulting into literary stardom with To Kill a Mockingbird, Harper Lee found herself in the midst of a courtroom drama as a silent observer. Despite her enormous success, her debut novel continued to sell over 1 million copies annually and retained its place at the pinnacle of literary acclaim. Lee was virtually incognito among the reporters and spectators at Burns's trial. The reason for her anonymity lay in the profound quiet that had enveloped her career since the explosive success of Mockingbird. Having burst onto the scene with a novel that tackled the pervasive racial injustices of the American South through the dignified resolve of Atticus Finch, Lee had set an incredibly high bar for herself. The world eagerly awaited her next work, but Lee receded from the public eye, her literary voice growing silent. Harper Lee's journey into writing was marked by an early departure from law school in Alabama, spurred by a deep-seated aspiration to carve out a space for herself in New York's literary world. However, the reality of her 20s was far from what she had envisioned. New York's promise turned into a grind of administrative work for an airline, a far cry from the writing career she yearned for. Salvation came in the form of an unexpected but life-changing gift from her friends, Michael and Joy Brown, in December 1956. An offering of financial support allowed Lee to do away with her job and dedicate herself wholly to writing for a year. This generosity laid the foundation for To Kill a Mockingbird's creation, a novel that not only captivated America with its piercing narrative and moral courage, but also firmly established Lee as a formidable voice against racial discrimination. However, the aftermath of Mockingbird's success was not as straightforward as it appeared. The weight of expectation and the pressure to match or surpass her first novel's towering achievement proved to be a daunting challenge for Lee. Personal tragedies, such as her father's passing in 1962, coupled with a struggle against alcoholism, further complicated her creative journey. Lee's biggest adversary, though, was her own standard of perfection. The desire to produce a work that exceeded Mockingbird's impact was paralyzing, leading to years where the world speculated about discarded manuscripts and a reclusive lifestyle overshadowed by her battle with the bottle. By the mid-1970s, Harper Lee had not only vanished from the literary scene, but seemed to have disappeared altogether, leaving behind a legacy shaped by a single monumental work and the mystique of what could have been another masterpiece. Part 7, Harper Lee's Quest for Truth in the Shadows of Crime. In the year 1977, a new chapter unfolded in Harper Lee's literary journey, steering her towards the grim and compelling world of true crime. This marked a significant pivot from her groundbreaking novel To Kill a Mockingbird. Instead, Lee found herself captivated by the enigmatic case of William Maxwell, a preacher embroiled in dark deeds, culminating in his dramatic public assassination. This narrative wasn't to stem from the realms of fiction, but from the raw, unsettling truths of real-life events. Lee's interest in this dark saga wasn't a sudden leap into unfamiliar territory. Her investigative roots were seeded during her involvement with Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, a narrative that dissected the brutal murder of the Clutter family in Kansas. Lee and Capote shared not only a deep-rooted friendship from childhood, but also a journey into the depths of crime writing. Despite Capote's early literary acclaim, Lee played a pivotal behind-the-scenes role in the creation of his non-fiction masterpiece. She was integral to gathering detailed research and insights, which painted a vivid backdrop to the Clutter family tragedy. However, Lee found herself at odds with Capote's creative liberties, the blending of fact with fiction to enrich the narrative. Although she stood by her friend, Lee harbored a conviction for maintaining factual integrity in recounting true crime stories. Her opportunity to put this conviction to test arose when she delved into the bizarre and chilling narrative of William Maxwell. Sparking Lee's interest was not just the sinister undertone of Maxwell's story, but also the involvement of Tom Radney, a legal figure who represented not just Maxwell, but later his killer, Robert Burns. Lee recognized the depth and duality of this storyline, one that intertwined greed, suspicion, and the drama of the courtroom, providing a ripe landscape for her long-awaited return to writing. Decamping to Alabama, Lee immersed herself in the labyrinth of Maxwell's world, determined to uncover the intricate web of truths obscured by rumors and partial facts. Her aim was clear: to craft a true crime narrative that resonated with the authenticity and ethical rigor she felt was absent from Capote's work. This project represented not just a revival of Lee's literary pursuits, but a quest to prove that the genre could transcend sensationalism, offering instead a meticulously researched and truthfully rendered account of real-life darkness and the quest for justice. Lee's embarkation on this path highlighted her unwavering commitment to seeking truth amidst the shadows, underscoring her belief in the power of literature to illuminate the complex facets of human nature and society. Part 8, The Unwritten Chapter of Harper Lee's Literary Legacy. As the jury delivered their verdict on that fateful day in September 1977, declaring Robert Burns not guilty by reason of temporary insanity, a palpable sense of astonishment swept through the courtroom. This decision not only defied the expectations of a conviction, given the indisputable evidence witnessed by hundreds, but it also echoed the complex emotions of a community that viewed Burns as a vigilante hero, stepping in where the law had seemingly failed. For Tom Radney, the defense lawyer with a tangled history of profiting from the murky dealings of William Maxwell and then representing his killer, this verdict marked a contentious victory. It also posed a poignant moment for Harper Lee, who attentively followed the trial, envisioning it as the premise for her second novel, an exploration into the grim tale of Maxwell and his web of alleged victims. However, the envisioned narrative never materialized into a published work, leaving a gap in Lee's literary oeuvre and in the annals of true crime literature. Lee's foray into this project was hampered by foundational challenges in piecing together a narrative rooted in concrete facts. The crux of the issue lay in the socio-economic dynamics and racial prejudices of the time. The key figures in the Maxwell case, being African American, had their lives and stories minimally documented by predominantly white authorities, rendering Lee's research an uphill battle in search of clarity and truth. This lack of documented history forced Lee to lean heavily on the accounts of those who knew Maxwell and his alleged victims personally. Yet herein lay another layer of complexity. As Lee discovered through her conversations, many believed fervently in Maxwell's use of voodoo magic to perpetrate his crimes, a belief system deeply ingrained in the community's narrative of the events. Given Lee's commitment to factual integrity and her dismay at Truman Capote's liberties with factual accuracy in Cold Blood, she was hesitant to interweave elements of magic and witchcraft into her recounting of the Maxwell case. The culmination of these challenges left Lee's ambitious true crime project in limbo, its revelations and insights into the depths of human nature and justice system unshared. Lee's passing in 2016 at the age of 89 closed the chapter on the possibility of this work ever coming to fruition. Despite the posthumous publication of Go Set a Watchman, a manuscript written before To Kill a Mockingbird, but published much later, stirring its own blend of literary intrigue. Lee's reticence to publish after Mockingbird is a testament to the high standards she set for herself and her unwavering principle toward the truth. While her decision to step away from the Maxwell Project leaves us pondering the impact of another potential masterpiece, it also serves as a mirror reflecting the complexities of storytelling, the pursuit of truth, and the ethical considerations therein. Harper Lee's legacy, though marked by her silence on this project, continues to inspire discussions on literature's power to confront and elucidate the human condition. Final summary. At the heart of these insights lies the unsettling account of William Maxwell, around whom a series of deaths unfolded under mysterious and eerily similar circumstances. Linked by more than mere coincidence, these deaths left the small community of Alabama in a grip of fear and suspicion, especially as Maxwell seemed to emerge financially prosperous from each tragedy, courtesy of life insurance claims that followed in the wake of every loss. Compelled by a mixture of intrigue and dissatisfaction with the liberties taken in Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, Harper Lee ventured deep into the complex and shadowy narrative of Maxwell, his alleged victims, and the ultimate act of vigilante justice that marked his end. Lee's pursuit was not just to craft another crime story, but to delve into a narrative that adhered strictly to the truth, untainted by the sensationalism or fictionalization that she had critiqued in Capote's work. However, this ambitious project to untangle and document the Maxwell case in a manner that upheld the integrity of factual storytelling never reached fruition. Despite years of meticulous research and the envisioning of a narrative that promised to shed light on the dark corners of human actions and the justice system, Lee's work remained incomplete, leaving a gaping hole in the landscape of true crime literature and in the legacy of one of America's most revered authors. The reasons behind this unfinished endeavor remain as much a mystery as some of the deaths surrounding Maxwell. While speculation abounds, the definitive motivations that hindered Lee from telling this tale are ensconced in the silent annals of history, leaving us to ponder the what-ifs of a literary masterpiece that might have provided profound insights into the intricate interplay of crime, culture, and the pursuit of justice. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.